a man, his dog, and Bigfoot. One of these participants does not survive the story. And then we meet a young man who has met the perfect girl for him. Everything seems to be going fine. But when they move into a new apartment, they have no idea they're going to have to face down a demonic presence. One that takes particular delights in driving them insane. Today on Dead Rabbit Radio. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Dead Rabbit Radio. I'm your host, Jason Carpenter. I'm having a great day. Hope you guys are having a great day too. Hope you guys are having tons of fun doing whatever you're doing. I'm actually really cold. I'm recording this episode later at night than I normally do, so I'm all got my pajama pants on. I'm wearing a monogrammed bathrobe. Just sitting here. I wish I was a participant in Dune. I wish I was on Dune World or whatever that place is called. Still haven't seen that movie. But for the first time in my life, I wished I was trapped on a desert planet full of Beetlejuice worms. But someone who already hails from Dirt World, walking into Dead Rabbit Radio Command, everyone get on your feet and give it up for J to the M. Woohoo, yeah, wee, ha ha ha, yeah, come on in, wiggle your way on in to Dead Rabbit Radio Command. You're like, Jason, are you sure you're not being sponsored by Warner Brothers? You've talked about Dune, you've never seen any of the movies, you just keep bringing it up. Dune, coming soon to streaming, to a dune near you. Yeah, I've never seen it. I hope to see it this weekend. J to the M, you're going to be our captain, our pilot this episode. You guys can't support the show financially, like Warner Brothers is, by paying me tons of money to keep mentioning Dune. That's okay, it really is. Just do what J to the M does. Talk about the show on your social media. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell everyone you know. Dead Rabbit Radio is your favorite paranormal show. J to the M shared their Spotify Wrapped on their social media, so that really helps get the word out about the show. Really, really appreciate that. J to the M is also a Patreon member as well, so double thanks to you. Let's go ahead. Oh, and I want to promote this. I know Warner Brothers is paying me a lot of money to promote Dune, but that money doesn't last forever, and it has nothing to do with ghosts, and they're actually not paying me to promote those movies. But I want to promote this. I will be speaking live at the Oregon Ghost Conference. I keep forgetting to bring this up. I'm super excited. I just, you know, when I record these episodes, I'm so discombobulated. March 23rd at 10 a.m., I will be giving a speech at the Oregon Ghost Conference in Seaside, Oregon. I'll be giving a speech. Can Ghosts Tell Time and Other Odd Questions is the name of it. Hope you guys can come out. I will be there on Friday night when the conference first opens. I will be there all day Saturday. I'll be giving my presentation at 10 in the morning, but then I'll be at my booth. And then Sunday, I'll kind of be floating around, and I have a live event with a radio podcast called Into the Parabnormal. So, yeah, I hope to see you guys there. We had a really good turnout last year, and here's hoping for another great turnout. But if you guys can't make it, that's fine. If you guys can make it, though, I love meeting you guys in person, so once again, March 22nd through the 24th at Seaside, Oregon. In Seaside, Oregon, I will be speaking at the Oregon Ghost Conference. Lots and lots of fun. J to the M. Let's go ahead and get this party started. I'm going to go ahead and toss you the hair hang glider. Everyone grab onto J to the M's ankles. As they jump off the highest point of Dead Rabbit Radio Command, glide us all the way out to Pennsylvania. Nice leisurely glide over the great states of America. We're headed out to Pennsylvania. Specifically, we're headed to Latrobe, Pennsylvania. It's October 1977. I was a little baby. I was a little one-year-old baby in 1977. So just picture me as a baby in another part of the country, rolling around on the floor. Know that that is happening at the same time as this story is going on. We're in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, October 1977. It's nighttime. We're about to meet a man. We don't have his real name. We'll call him Joey. He's coming home And he notices something weird as he's getting closer to the front door. There's this weird light glowing around the house. No noise, but how else do you describe light on a podcast? He notices a bizarre light illuminating his entire house, and that's when he sees two things at the same time. And you have to wonder which one you would see first. Like, which one is going to shock your brain into not working? But there's two things, right? So you're going to see one thing and you're going to go, what? And then you turn your head slightly to the other direction. No! Like, they're both terribly terrifying. Tell me which one. You're like, Jason, the one that's more believable is going to be the worst one. And I know it involves a dog. Because you introduced the story saying a man, a dog, and Bigfoot have an encounter, and one of them doesn't make it. Well, I'm pretty sure Bigfoot's still alive. The man has to be the one telling the story. Joey's walking up to his front door. That's good deduction. Good deduction. Joey's walking up to his front door. He sees this illuminated. He sees his house bathed in a strange light. And that's when he sees his dog, who we will call Robbie. Good old Robbie. He is hanging by his neck, his lifeless dog body swaying in the wind. Jason, why'd you name the dog? I thought the dog was going to do something. I thought the dog was going to at least bite Bigfoot or run around or go on an adventure. Why'd you name the dog just to hang him? Well, Robbie's hanging and he's dead, and that is when, or really at the same time, both of these things Joey's taking in, he sees his dog hanging by the neck, and then he sees an 8-foot tall Bigfoot standing nearby. 8-foot tall Bigfoot with glowing red eyes standing next to your dead dog. I don't know where Joey was at to start off this story. We just know that he returned home. Wherever he was from, he had a gun with him because he sees his dead dog, Robbie, no! And then he sees Bigfoot. He's like, you bastard. And he's reaching for his gun and he opens fire. And Bigfoot's just standing there and his bullets are bouncing off of him. Ding, clink, clink. Ding, clink, clink, clink. He doesn't say that he laughed, but I would laugh if bullets were bouncing off of me. Joey opened fire on Bigfoot and the bullets did nothing. Now that's the end of that story. That's all that we have. And you're like, Jason, there has to be more to that. Wait, what? Then what happened? Did Bigfoot just stand there? If you go to this house today, is Bigfoot still just standing there and Joey's still shooting him? Did Bigfoot walk away? Did he vanish? What did Joey do? What did Joey do after he fired all these bullets and he found out Bigfoot was bulletproof? Did he just go, whatever, just walk on by? He bumps into Robbie's body as he's trying to get in the front door. The dog's like swaying back and forth. That's a good question. Those are all great questions. What happened next? The reason why I wanted to cover that story, I know it's really short. Our next story is going to be a bit longer, but I wanted to talk about that story for two reasons. One, because it's absolutely bonkers that you would have an event like that happen. But two, I found out about the story on thinkaboutitdocs.com. They cover a lot of UFO stuff. It's pretty much just a repository of UFO stories. And you go, Jason, there's no UFO in this story. There's a bright light, but then it's just a Bigfoot and a dead dog. Where's the alien coming from? And that leads us to a question that plagues the paranormal community. I don't want to go on too long about this, but thinkaboutitdocs.com got this from a book called The Pennsylvania Bigfoot. That's where they got this story from. It was a book published in 1985 by Paul G. Johnson and Joan L. Jeffers. And it's out of print. As far as I can tell, there's no way to get a hold of this book. The only record I could find is thinkaboutitdocs.com mentioned it, and then there is a website called bigfoottimes.net, has a photo of the cover of this book. And it's obviously a homemade book. Like, you can just tell from the design of the cover, there isn't one. By the way, it's just a white page with written on it, the Pennsylvania Bigfoot. It's published in 1985, is 95 pages. It's out of print. It's gone. And this is something we see happen a lot in the paranormal community. Unless somebody buys that book and reads it and remembers it and keeps it in their library, they can, at a later date, tell us more information about it. But more often than not, somebody has a bizarre experience or somebody collects the bizarre experiences of others, they publish a book, because this stuff is so niche, especially pre-2000, right? Before the X-Files, you were a weirdo if you openly believed in a lot of this stuff. Sure, New Age was more mainstream accepted. Astrology, definitely more mainstream accepted than Bigfoot and aliens. That was just something that kooks down by the river believed in. You'd write a book, and you'd sell a couple copies, and then either you would sell out of copies, or you would sell like five, and you ordered 500, and it's just kind of this big embarrassment. And nobody else ever has access to that story unless someone who got a copy of that book holds on to it for a while and then tells the story again. We don't know what the Pennsylvania Bigfoot, this book, is about unless somebody has done that. And all that information gets lost. We see a lot of these small-run books, even medium-run books. Like, every so often, a publisher in the 1970s will have printed out a book, and it was fairly popular in the 1970s regarding paranormal phenomenon. I'll come across it in my research. I'll go to Amazon. You can't find it anywhere. And that's from a mainstream publisher. Or maybe you find a copy, but it's $500. Missing 411 books. A lot of people don't realize this. David Paulides, or however you pronounce his name, he published those books, and a couple people bought them, and then they became collector's items. It was like $100 a book for the longest time. You could buy used copies. He wasn't printing anymore. And then, through the paranormal community, through the X board, people started talking about missing 411, and then what happened is you'd go, oh, that sounds fascinating, where can I learn more? You go to Amazon, you can only buy a used copy for like $100, $150. And people were asking David to put this stuff up for free online, or at least let us buy an ebook at a cheaper price. And then I believe he just republished them, the prices have dropped down, and he became a superstar in the paranormal community. He published the books, and then there was quite a period of time where people who were really into the stuff knew who he was, but you couldn't read the books for yourself. Luckily, he was still around. Luckily, he was still alive. He's able to present the information again, and now he's continuing on that quest. But if he had died, if he'd published those three books and then died, that'd be it. Every year, there'd be a smaller and smaller amount of those books that were available. It's very, very important to keep this information going. I know I'm always trying to death-proof the show, uploading the episodes to the Wayback Machine, like the actual audio to the Internet Archive, so all of this research just won't disappear. There is, if you live in Plumerville, Arkansas, this is cool, but I mean, I can never have access to this. Multiple restraining orders in Plumerville prevent me from visiting. Plumerville, Arkansas, there is decades of a newsletter called the UFO News Clipping Service. Started in 1969, ended in 2011. It was just news clippings of UFO sightings from around the world that were then put in a zine form. They would be cut out and glued on a paper and turned into like a newsletter. It ran for decades. It's out of print now. You can find one or two copies, like, on the Internet Archive. I think the most I found was, like, 10 on the Internet Archive, actually. But we're talking decades worth of this stuff. In the Arkansas State Archives, there are 6 boxes, each one 3 cubic feet of just the newsletters, along with 7 reels of microfilm. All of this information, all of these UFO encounters are in this one location. Now, you might have been subscribed to this newsletter. Maybe you have a couple copies. But maybe you read it and you kind of filed it away and it got water damaged and you tossed it. If the ones in the Arkansas State Archives get water damaged, it's done. You may have 10, you may have even a couple dozen copies of this somewhere online. The vast majority of them are on paper in these boxes. All of that research just sitting there. If you live in Arkansas, you can visit the state archives, you can view these items. But it's so easy for this information to disappear. I also want to say, though, again, most of the time this happens. Like, the stuff in Arkansas, it's not disappeared, but it's just not accessible. It would be amazing if they could scan it and upload it online. The librarians, I don't think, get paid a lot anyways. That would take a lot of money, a lot of time to do that. I think it would be worth it. You can go, like, on eBay. You can buy 11 issues. You can buy a year's worth of the UFO News Clipping Service issues that came out monthly at that point. $90 for 11 issues. And that's it, right? If I bought those, nobody else can get those. It's not like they're printing new ones. Luckily, in the case of the Pennsylvania Bigfoot story, I did leave you guys on a bit of a cliffhanger. While I was looking for a copy of this book, because I wanted to know how did the story start, what happened at the end, I was looking around, I found a book called Silent Invasion. It was published in 2010. It's Silent Invasion, the Pennsylvania UFO Bigfoot Casebook. So it has to be part of the same story, right? These two have to be related. I put this book in my Amazon wish list if one of you guys wanted to buy it for me, but I'm going to pick it up pretty soon anyways. I put it there because I'm didn't want to make it a purchase right now. I'm getting ready to go on the, you know, kind of saving my money up to go to the Ghost Conference. I put it in there, but whether or not someone buys it for me, I'm going to be getting it shortly. It includes these weird stories about the Pennsylvania Bigfoot, and it says here in the description, some of the startling cases discussed are UFOs and Bigfoot seen at the same time and place. We've covered stories like that. The case of the vanishing Bigfoot, we've covered stories like that. But then we have this one, it says, Bigfoot shooting incidents. So it has to be the same story. That has to be the same story. So we will do a follow-up if there's more information to cover, but I wanted to cover that story for two reasons. One, not just for the bizarreness of the Bigfoot assumedly killing the dog, but also, if you live in Arkansas, try to check out those archives. If you have access to these old magazines, to these old websites, that's what I love about you guys sending me websites and stuff like that. But let's keep this community going, not Dead Rabbit Radio community, the paranormal community as a whole. Let's keep archiving this stuff. Let's not let this disappear, because this is real research that, especially if it's something that only one person experienced and they wrote it down and they ran 500 copies of a self-published book, pre-internet, no one's going to hear that story. Imagine if the dude who wrote Communion, what's that guy's name? Whitley Strieber. Imagine if the guy who wrote Communion, he was already a horror novelist. He's already a published author. But what if he wasn't? What if he had that exact same experience and he wrote that book and he published 500 copies and really brought the idea of the gray alien into the consciousness, into the shared consciousness? What if he wrote 500 copies of that and he sold 8 and the rest just kind of molded in his garage until he passed away? He's still alive, but you know what I mean? This alternate version of him. Keep that knowledge and research alive. I know that segment was a little nerdier than I normally do. It's like paranormal research. But that's something I've been mentioning on and off on the podcast for a while. I kind of wanted to go into more depth with that. J to the M. Let's go ahead and toss you the keys to the world famous Carpenter Copter. We're waving goodbye. We're waving goodbye to this dog murdering Bigfoot. Again, we assume, to be fair, Bigfoot could have just shown up. Someone else could have hung the dog. And Bigfoot's getting blamed. But we're leaving behind Pennsylvania. J to the M. Fly us all the way out to a house in the city. Headed all the way out to this house in the city. This is one of those stories that, to help you build a visual, I've lived a very sheltered life, I guess. I don't know if this is an American thing or what, but apparently, at one point or another, people would buy houses. We covered a story like this a while back, and it kept blowing my mind just trying to picture it. Even though it had, like, demons running around, it's like this family was being possessed. I was like, how did this work out? Apparently, maybe this is an East Coast thing, too, because everything's so old over there. I don't know what country this story took place in. It's fairly recent. You can buy a house and turn it into apartments? Like, that's a thing, apparently. Because I run across these stories and they'll say, I'm renting an apartment, but then in the narrative, this story has something similar. They go next door to their neighbor's house and learn that their house is haunted, too. And I go, wait, what? Now it's a house? I don't know. In California, there's only one type of apartment, and they look like they looks like they got imported straight from a communist bloc country. They're just big rectangles with a bunch of doors and windows in them. But apparently, people can buy a house and go, oh, now it's two apartments. So I don't know. Maybe that's normal where you live. Maybe that's normal literally everywhere and I'm just sheltered. But that's where we're at now. We're at a house that's been converted to an apartment. And that's where we're going to meet a man we'll call Norm. This story took place a couple of years ago. Norm goes, in this period of my life, I could really kind of sum it up. Things were going really, really good for me. Really good for me. I started dating this girl. I met this really cool girl we'll call Patricia. She's awesome. Like, she was perfect for me. I ended up getting a good job. I worked at a warehouse, the night shift, so you get the pay differentials and all that stuff. And I lucked out. I got a 3-bedroom apartment. I don't know, man. I don't know what that means. It's in a house, apparently. I got a 3-bedroom apartment in the city. It's like, great. It's really easy to get to work. Got a great girl, great job, great place. What could go wrong? He said his girlfriend, as cool as she was, she did have this weird tattoo. She had a tattoo of a pentagram, which you automatically associate with, well, really depending on, you could associate it automatically with Satanism. You could associate it automatically with just magic, mysticism in general. Is it upright? Is it inverted? He goes, she really wasn't that into the paranormal. She just really liked this show called Paranormal. I've never heard of a show called Paranormal. Again, maybe the story doesn't take place in America. Maybe he meant to say Supernatural. But he goes, really, the tattoo was from that television show. She didn't get a pentagram tattoo because she believed in the power of it. She got it because it was cool and stylized and reminded her of her favorite show. But, I mean, listen, man, if that's the worst thing you can complain about with your girlfriend is that she has, like, she has a Gilmore Girls tattoo. She has a tattoo from some television show. You're doing pretty good. Norm and Patricia, they move into this new apartment. They move into their apartment. They have two beagles with them. Two little puppies. Woof, 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 walking around. Hey, Patricia, this place looks pretty cool, doesn't it? It does. It sure does, Norm. We're going to have so much fun here. Beagles, look out. They're running down that hallway. Riff, riff, riff. Oh, home of our own. Norm said, right when we moved in, we were unpacking our stuff, and I had the two dogs, they had these food dishes. And is taking them into the kitchen to put down on the floor. But first I took them and I set them down on the kitchen table. When not a second goes by before they fly off of the kitchen table. Swoosh, dunk, 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 dunk. And slam against the kitchen floor. Now, while Patricia doesn't have a keen belief in the power of the pentagram, she just thought it was a cool tattoo. She doesn't believe in ghosts. So she was immediately freaked out by the idea that these two food dishes were flung off of a table. Norm's reaction was, okay, that's kind of weird. Picking up the food dishes and putting them on the ground, he's going to fill them up with food. He doesn't really think, oh, a ghost did that. He doesn't believe in ghosts. Figured maybe the table is crooked. Maybe the world is spinning faster for a split second. But not ghosts. However, as we often see in these stories, we've covered so much of this stuff over the years. These mysterious events start to pile up. At a certain point, you can't ignore the fact that this isn't just a world spinning faster for a split second explanation. At a certain point, you have to start to run out of rational reasons for what's going on and start to look at the paranormal. He said, for one, he goes, it's way too many to list. It's way too many lists he wrote in his narrative, but he pointed out some of the more bizarre ones. He had this cabinet. He had this cabinet where he would store his towels, his washed towels, bath towels. Apparently a lot of them. I can't imagine having a whole cabinet full of towels. I have like 3 towels. And they're all hanging up at the same time. My bathroom, I just have 3 towels and they're all hanging up at the same time. And visitors have to guess which one I've used recently. They're like, It's a mental test. It's like a saw trap. They're like, I just want to dry my hands. Which one of these touched Jason's naked body? Live or die, your choice. You're like, the doorknob falls off of the bathroom. Anyways, he has a whole closet full of clean linens. Crazy. He washed his towels, he puts them in the cabinet. And then, this never happened before. If this happened on day one, he'd be like, well, this isn't paranormal, this is just a gross place. But one day, he washed these towels, he put them in the cabinet. The next day, when he walked by the cabinet, he goes, what the? Oh, what is that smell? And he opens up the cabinet and his nostrils are instantly filled with the smell of death. He can smell rotting flesh coming out of his cabinet. Oh, what is that? And he can never find the source of the smell. So it wasn't like a rat died or like a possum took the plain dead part a little too seriously. No, I mean, because then it wouldn't be paranormal, right? If you opened it up and there was a dead squirrel in there, you go, well, that's not paranormal. It's just dead squirrel. But he can never find the source of the rotting smell. One night, this is another story he told. One night at work, he gets a panicked call from his girlfriend, Norm, oh my God, come home quick. And he's like, what are you talking about? What's going on? Maybe he was a little more empathetic than that. He was kept up all night by the smell of rotting flesh. He's like, I did not get a good night's sleep. Can I move my bed? What's the matter, Patricia? What's the matter? And she goes, I don't even know how to talk about this. I was sitting here in the living room with my beagles, with our beagles, our puppies. And all of a sudden, I heard a knock in the kitchen. Now, I'm not in the kitchen. Beagle 1 and Beagle 2, they're not in the kitchen. The Beagle Boys, I can't believe it took me so long to make that joke. The Beagle Boys and me are all in the living room. I hear a knock in the kitchen. And one of the Beagle Boys, we'll name him Scout, all of a sudden perks up. And he's staring right at the kitchen. He starts growling. And Patricia's just staring at the kitchen as well. She has no idea what is in there, but it's definitely got the attention of one of her dogs. And although the dog is growling, it's not moving towards the kitchen. Scout's looking into the kitchen. Patricia's looking into the kitchen. And she thinks, there's someone in there. Somehow somebody got into the house and ended up in the kitchen. And that's when she sees, clear as day, she's staring right at the kitchen. She sees one of the dog food bowls, there's 2 bowls on the ground, slowly glides across the linoleum as if an invisible hand was dragging it. She calls up Norm. She's like, you got to do something. Like, this is terrifying. Our house is haunted. Our house is haunted, and not just that. it's messing with us. You gotta come here right now. And again, Norm said there was a lot of little things that were leading up to all of this. He's marking the big ones. But at this point, he's probably thinking, like, I don't know if it's a ghost, but I will come home. I will come home, because he can tell Patricia's panicked. He comes home because he doesn't live that far from his work. He comes home, talks to Patricia, sees that the dog bowl has been moved. It's in a different place than it normally is. It's been moved, but you know, like, okay. He moves the dogfish back where it's supposed to go. Walks over, Patricia, you know, I really don't know what else to do. I have to go back to work, but everything is going to be fine. Don't worry about it. If anything happens, just give me a call. Kisses his girlfriend goodbye. Goes back to work. 10 minutes later, his phone rings, and he looks, it's Patricia again. So he answers it, and she's at her mom's house. She said, it happened again. She goes, I'm sitting there. Dog bowl starts moving. Took the beagles. We left the house. I won't be at home when you come home. I'm at my mom's. You're obviously going to start talking about this with your neighbors. At first, you might kind of keep it low key, but when you see somebody run out of a house carrying both their beagles at night, you want to check in on them. Hey, is everything okay? So what happened? Norm said, we started talking to our upstairs neighbor. Because it's an apartment or a house. Again, I'm not totally for sure, but he goes, we started talking to our upstairs neighbor, and the upstairs neighbor goes, oh yeah, no, totally, this place is haunted. It's 100% haunted. And Norm's like, what? And the neighbor's like, yeah, no. I actually had a friend of mine who used to kick it over here, used to hang out with me. But one day they were chilling at my place, and they saw what they said was a 7-foot-tall shadow man wearing a hat. And it scared them so bad they won't come over anymore. Like, if we want to hang out, it's either in public or at their place. They refuse to come back here. It scared them that bad. Norm's like, well, why do you think this place is haunted? I mean, other than the phantoms, other than the items moving, the rotting smell, do you know why this place is haunted? And the upstairs neighbor goes, look, I don't know. I haven't lived here forever, but I will say this. At one point, we were up in the attic cleaning stuff around, and we found a note that I can only assume is left by the previous tenants, and written on it was, Marduk is God. And so Norm goes, I went and checked out. Might want to find out who Marduk is, right? You might be sharing a residence with him. Marduk is a... I looked this up earlier. Let me pull it back up. Marduk is a Babylonian god. He's basically on the level of... not Zeus. It would be higher than that. Who would that be? Kronos? He's a god of creation. A god of water, agriculture, justice, medicine, and magic. Thanks, Wikipedia. But does it have anything to do? Does it have anything to do with the paranormal events going on? Was some guy getting ready to do a book report or write a fictional novel? Does this have something to do with it? Does it not? There's probably a bunch of weird notes written all over in people's houses. Norm's probably rationalizing all this stuff as he's like, oh, I'm... Hope I'm not being... It's one thing to be haunted by a ghost. It's another thing to be haunted by a Babylonian deity. Norm ends up talking to the landlady. And he goes, hey, we've been having some weird stuff happen in our house. And the landlady's like, yeah. And Norm's like, yeah. And we talked to the upstairs neighbor. And apparently there's like a giant shadow person. And Marduk may or may not be God. And the landlady's like, yeah, the place is haunted. The whole place is haunted. The whole place is haunted. She knew all along. And Norm was kind of upset with her. Norm was kind of upset that she didn't tell them that they'd be moving into a haunted house. But really what's happening here is Norm is starting to put together a pattern. Because while we've been focusing on the paranormal events, while all of this stuff is going on, there has been a string of normal events. Norm and Patricia fighting more often than they used to. Stressors in their life. Ordinary obstacles that we all face, but they seem to be a little more magnified in this home. The fights are a little louder, a little more bitter. The disappointments hurt a little more than normal. There's something wrong, not just with the paranormal aspect, but it's... Norm is having a hard time kind of putting it into words, but he can tell that just normal day-to-day stuff is becoming increasingly hard. But we still have all the paranormal stuff. Patricia starts to hear disembodied voices when she's home. One point, she's in the bathroom and she hears a man whispering right behind her. That's terrifying, right? I don't know if it's more terrifying if you're on the toilet and you hear someone whispering, or if you're in the shower and you hear someone whispering. They're both equally horrifying. She'll hear Norm call out for her when she knows he's dead asleep. Because he's working that night job, their sleep schedules are different. She knows that he's asleep, but she'll hear, "Patricia!" And she's just sitting there in her house, knowing the voice she just heard is not coming from her boyfriend, but something pretending to be her boyfriend. They both would hear footsteps when no one else was walking around. That can be chalked up, right? They do have an upstairs neighbor. But when they would find the occasional table flipped over, again, at a certain point, you can rule out there's only two people. The beagles aren't that strong. They did break into that money bin one time, but these two beagles, they can't flip a table. This just goes on and on. Norm says he started having these gory nightmares, these awful, violent nightmares. He goes, "Nothing I'd ever had before. I start to have these extremely ultra-violent dreams." This just is piling up. This is how this paranormal... This is how these negative paranormal incidents work. It's just a slow buildup. It's almost like this entity needs to gain power. We see this time and time again. But what really was the final nail in the coffin, at least as far as Norm figuring out what's actually going on, is he was supposed to have a meeting at work. This was a very important meeting he had to go to. He was aware that if he missed this meeting, it could cost him his job. It would cost him his job. I don't think it was a disciplinary meeting. It might have been a training meeting or a meeting with a higher up or whatever. But whatever the case was, he goes, "I had to be at this meeting and I knew it was coming up and I prepared for it." He goes, "I planned on leaving to get to work an hour early. I'd rather go to work early and sit there and BS with my coworkers and have zero possibility of being late than trying to gather everything in the last 15 minutes and running out the door because my work is so close I can do it." He goes, "This meeting was so important, I planned to get to work an hour early and I'm ready to go. I got everything done that I need to do." And I walk out in the living room and I go to get my car keys. And they're gone. Okay, well, where did I put my car? I know. God. Starts looking around. Checks the places he would normally put his car keys. They're not there. He starts to look in random places where he wouldn't put his car keys. They're not there. He starts watching that clock tick closer and closer. He bought himself an extra hour to be there, but that's gone now. He needs to find his car keys. He needs to get to work. This is that important. If he misses this, he will lose this job. He's looking. He's tearing the place apart at this point. He's throwing off the couch cushions. He's looking underneath chairs. Sometimes I've even checked the fridge. He might have checked the fridge because at a certain point you're like, I don't know where they're at. And finally he realizes, I have to go. I have to go now. If I don't leave now, I will be late. He ends up going to his neighbor and saying, I'm sorry, but can you give me a ride to work? Like, I have to go now. I can't find my keys. The neighbor's like, yeah, totally, totally. They get into the neighbor's car. Norm gets to work. He gets to the meeting on time. The neighbor goes and picks Norm up. Later on, Norm is talking to the neighbor, and the neighbor goes, you're never going to believe what happened. And I was like, what are you talking about? And the neighbor goes, I found your car keys. What? Where were they? The neighbor goes, well, after I took you to work, I came into your living room, and I saw that it was trashed because you were looking for your keys. I figured I'd kind of help straighten stuff out. You know, we all have these moments where we kind of lose it a bit, stressed out. Figured I'd help out. I started picking stuff up. I put the cushions back on the couch, and I'm kind of like moving stuff over here and there. And then I go into the bathroom because I have to go to the bathroom. That wasn't part of looking for your keys. I just really go to the bathroom. I'm in the bathroom, and I hear a loud bang. Boom. Come from the living room. And I walk out of the bathroom, and on top of one of the couch cushions that I had just picked up off the floor and put back on your couch, on top of one of those couch cushions was your car keys. And this was where Norm realized 100%, if he could not put it into words before this, he now understood what was going on. I'm going to read this verbatim to you. This was posted online by someone going by the name Normandy78806. They wrote this regarding this event specifically. This told me this thing was calculating, and at this point, I knew it was actually trying to hurt me. If I didn't make it to work, I would have lost my job, and it somehow chose this one day of all days to do this. Unreal. Unquote. This thing, whatever it was, whether it was a vengeful spirit or a demonic presence, it was out to hurt the people in this house. It tried to get him to lose his job. Because he's right. It could have, this key vanishing thing could have happened at any point, but it happened, which is utterly terrifying because what it, a lot of times ghosts, we ascribe both a personality to and a, we almost neuter them in a way. We give them not a lot of agency. This one was actively picking the days it wanted to do certain things. It was completely self-aware and it learned information about Norm. It knew that this was the day that this would cause the most chaos, which means that some of these spirits, this is something I plan on talking about at the Oregon Ghost Conference. Actually, now I'll have to put this in my speech. I'll have to shorten it, obviously, but it's a great story, but it goes on for a long time. I don't have that much time in the speech, but the ghost learned through communications between Norm and Patricia or between Norm on the phone that he had that meeting that day. This ghost or this demon or whatever it was, learned new knowledge, retained that knowledge, and then was able to act it out on a particular calendar date. And while that sounds, you're like, Jason, that's not spectacular. It is, because this has been one of the questions about the paranormal. Can they retain new information? Can they learn things? How does time work for a ghost? The ghost would have to be able to go, this is the day. In 1 week, he's going to have this meeting. If I really want to disrupt his life, this is the time to do it. And then to return the keys in such a way to the neighbor, a spectacular way. I mean, the spirit could have easily have hidden the keys underneath the garage door. And he finds them, Norm finds them a couple days later, and he's like, well, what? How did they get here? And then he would never know for sure that a spirit was involved. No, whatever this was wanted Norm to know it existed, and it wanted Norm to know that it liked messing with him. It took pleasure out of Norm's stress levels rising. It took delight out of his destruction, out of watching Norm just emotionally collapse, watching that clock ticking, trying to find those keys. Norm said, at the end of this story, me and my girlfriend, we broke up. And it just became a very toxic relationship. It didn't start off that way, but it became that way. And in a way, Norm blames the house. Norm believes whatever lives in this house exasperated the normal relationship problems that people have. Whatever this was, spirit or demon, like even at the end of the story, we don't know. I would lean more towards demonic, because it's just so negative. I mean, usually a spirit can be evil. You can have evil spirits like you can have evil people. But it just, and the power level as well. But who knows, right? Who knows? He goes, I ended up breaking up with my girlfriend. The relationship just became too toxic. And he wrote this. I thought this was a super interesting thing as well. I'll read verbatim. He goes, quote, whatever this thing was, it was horribly negative. This wasn't just some haunting where a ghost is doing random things. It had a mind. And it seemed to do things to cause stress and negativity to take hold in my relationship. When things were good at home, the paranormal activity would ratchet up. Then when things got bad for us, it would just go dormant. Felt like it had to always keep everyone in the house at each other's throats. So again, the intention, the drive, the ebb and flow of it. There's a level of intelligence here that we don't often see in haunting stories. We've covered a ton of them, and I'm not saying ghosts are dummies by any means, but this is like a master manipulator. Ghosts may have agendas, demons definitely do. This thing here, the fact that it would be negative when they were doing good and then be nothing when they were already suffering, that's just so interesting. It could have went into a dormant state to absorb this negative energy. It could have not have been entertained. It could want the breakdown. It could like taking the positive and turning it negative, but negativity just kind of bored it. I can't think of another time that we've come across a spirit that was so playful in such an evil way. Playful in the sense that it was kind of playing with its own food. He goes, I went on to learn that, obviously, I learned that my house was haunted. My upstairs neighbor, who was, I guess, part of the same house, the apartment complex, or whatever, worked out. Their place was haunted, but the house to the right of me and the house to the left of me, they were both haunted, and all three of these houses were owned by the same family. So it's possible that this could have been some family curse. Maybe someone cursed this plot of land or this family in particular, and Norm and Patricia were dealing with that. They were just unwitting participants in all of this. They had no idea when they moved in that their relationship was going to fall apart because, again, you have normal life stressors, but the paranormal can make it worse. But this one, that was its goal. This one was purposely aggravating them when things were good to make them suffer. There would be no joy in this house. There would be no laughter. There'd be no peace or rest. If you weren't at each other's throats, this entity would create situations that would make you so uneasy that even the slightest thing you would react to. Not like a noise coming from an empty room down the hallway, but just your loved one saying something out of turn and you're already jumpy. Everything sets you off. Absolutely evil. It's a crazy paranormal story. I can't think of one that we've come across that is similar to this. We've covered hauntings that have lasted a long period of time. We've covered hauntings that involve a single family. I think the closest one I can find to it was that woman whose house was haunted and it was messing with her and her kids, and basically it drained her so much of energy, she didn't even have time to sell her house. She's like, I can't move. Whenever I think about moving, I just have no energy to do it. I believe that this demon is actually draining me. I'm trapped here. It's draining out my life. That's the closest I could find, just off the top of my head, to this one. But absolutely terrifying story on multiple levels. One, a entity this powerful that enjoys causing suffering. That's something that's already terrifying. That's literally a cat playing with its food. But then also the idea, and again, it's something that we don't often think about or talk about, but just the planning that can go into being a haunting presence. The fact that it could go, on this date, I'm going to hide his keys. On this particular day, I'm going to hide his keys. I'm going to make him lose his mind and possibly lose his job. But I think just the mental stress, watching him go through all of that, was enough for this dark spirit to get off on. But just thinking that it learned a piece of information and acted on it on a particular day. I know it sounds minor because humans do that all the time, but in the world of the paranormal, it's not something we see. This truly is a one-of-the-kind ghost story. And honestly, that's a good thing. Because if there is more out there like this, I don't think we'd stand a chance against them. DeadRabbitRadio@gmail.com is going to be our email address. You can also hit us up at facebook.com/DeadRabbitRadio. TikTok is @DeadRabbitRadio. Dead Rabbit Radio is the daily paranormal conspiracy and true crime podcast. You don't have to listen to it every day, but I'm glad you listened to it today. Have a great day.